Hey guys, what's going on? Welcome to the show. Welcome back. It is Action Movie Anatomy here on a Wednesday afternoon. We've been waiting for this film for literally years of our lives. It's The Equalizer Part 2. I was trying to do the line from Training Day. I screwed up. I'll see you guys in just one quick second.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk. We talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Action Movie Anatomy.
That might have been my finest moment.
That was the greatest intro this show has ever had in the history of all 166 episodes.
Yeah, I'm sweating.
You should be. You should be. That should have caused you to sweat because I know that I would have been sweating after that intro. Oh my gosh, today's the day.
Today's the day. It's The Equalizer 2. We're in studio. We're talking about it. It's Action Movie Anatomy here on the Popcorn Talk Network, the online broadcast network dedicated to talking movies, all things movie related, and pop culture by the bucketful. I'm your host, Ben Bateman. I'm joined today by Mr. Andrew Guy.
I'm the guy that beat Dan Murrell. We're back, man. We took a week off, and it feels, whenever we take 1 week off,
it feels like an eternity.
It feels so long. It really does feel like an eternity. It's a trip.
Yeah, it's pretty bizarre, actually, that because I guess we've gotten so used to one day a week for, like, years of our lives being the same routine, that a week off really does feel like, it's kind of therapeutic in some ways.
It is. It really does feel, because I'm actually taking this Friday off of table read.
Yeah.
It does feel really, really nice. It's like what people talk about, like paid vacation.
Yeah, right.
Because the show's still going. Fans are still interacting. Yeah. You're just sitting at home.
Yeah.
But on a plane.
But we like pre-tape episodes to make sure that there's still content.
Yeah, of course. You know,
I'm proud of us for that. All right, guys, we're here. We're talking The Equalizer Part 2. There's a lot of things to talk about, as well as my embarrassing intro.
I love that intro. I'm going to watch it.
Keep we talk action movies on this show. Those action movies, is the chat losing it? I hope so.
They are. They're having a great time.
Ben's a moron. We talk action movies on the show. Those action movies adhere to four basic rules. Rule number one, the hero always plays by their own rules. I would definitely say Robert McCall plays by his own rules.
I don't know the last time Denzel played by anyone else's rules.
Except for the rules of a Hawaiian shirt and some sweet sunglasses.
All you have to do is wear it with confidence. Doesn't need to fit.
He's like, this movie's like sponsored by Tommy Bahama.
It is.
What?
It actually is.
No, it's not.
That was deja vu.
That was nice. Yeah. Rule number two, the hero and the villain are always the smartest people, beings, things, dinosaurs, what have you in the room. It's funny because like, you're supposed to feel that Pedro Pascal is the other smartest guy in the room, but he just feels like an idiot compared to Denzel.
Yeah. Yeah, he totally does.
He's got nothing on King Kong.
No, he doesn't. And I'm trying to, like, fight for the fact that it makes Denzel better, but I think a better villain makes the hero even more badass at the end of the day.
Way better.
And Pedro Pascal has got a really weird... He's had a really weird Hollywood career so far.
Super weird, yeah. Well, and we'll get to that when we get to star profiles. But yeah, definitely. I mean, you would have to say like they're supposed to fit the archetypes of the smartest people in the room. So I think it kind of works. Rule number one, rule number three: the movie is driven by police, military, political, or mercenary figure. He was political and military.
Yeah, at one time. Apparently, people missed your intro for some reason, so now they're all going back to watch it.
Oh, that's terrific.
Yeah, it's gonna be great for
that's
everyone.
Really wonderful. Yeah, yeah. We salute you, Army. Rule number four: the movie contains a minimum of one explosion. Of course, it's an Equalizer movie.
Yeah, there's some booby trap somewhere.
Slow mo walking. Is there actually slow mo walking in this movie with an explosion?
Ooh,
I don't think there is.
Might not be.
Yeah, there should be.
Fuqua's maturing. He's.
All right, guys, so coming up on the show today, we've got a bunch of fun stuff coming up. We've got some AMA questions that you submitted that we're going to answer. We have a segment called Who Wore It Best that you don't want to miss. This one's going to be really good. We have Over Siege, Under Siege, Properly Sieged on Antoine Fuqua, and we will be debuting a brand new segment called Schmodown Corner mid-episode. Yeah, yeah. Stay tuned for that. Quick shout-out before we get to thesis statement, and that is going to be shout-outs to Nick Gilmore and John Goetz. I hope I'm saying your name correctly. These are two brand new, I believe, a Brigadier General and a General, or is it just two Generals?
I think it's a Brigadier and maybe a Commodore.
Yeah, I have the rankings all written down.
Nick's the 10, I'm pretty sure, because...
John Goetz. Yeah, John Goetz is our new Brigadier General.
Yes, John Goetz and Paul DeNuzzo. Paul, our boy, upgraded from General to Brigadier. John came in hot and heavy with just a straight up Brigadier General patronage.
Exciting.
And yeah, we guys, without further ado, we
Salute you. Now, if you're wondering what the hell we're talking about, it refers to a Patreon that we'll get to later in the show. But a big shout out to you guys because we love you. If you want to follow along with the conversation, you can find me personally at Ben Bateman Media on Twitter.
You guys can find me at Andrew Guy, and you can find the show's Twitter, the Team Action Show.
Yeah,
right.
Team Action Show.
Yeah.
We have a new Twitter handle. We decided that the Nebulous AMA Podcast Twitter handle that we had had for years that we sort of like rarely used and was confusing because people think it's like an Ask Me Anything podcast Twitter handle.
Right.
We decided that, you know, Team Action has become sort of between the various fan bases a thing, and we are Team Action. That's what we are.
We are Team Action. So at Team Action Show on Twitter, and it'll be a little more pointed. We'll try to be a little more interactive. And that's
pointed.
Us.
That was a good word.
It was a good use of that word.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right, guys, we're gonna get into the trailer before we cue up thesis statement.
They're going to war with me.
The new trailer dropping they do is so weird.
Yeah, where they do the thing first before time. And then
it's for social media. No, that's what it's for.
Right. Right.
Different life.
Now you come back.
Yes, I'm looking for something.
Yes.
You can find whatever you wish in Turkey.
How about a man who kidnapped a little girl from her American mother?
We'll not be looking for such a man. Will be dangerous.
For you?
For you.
Men like him would think that.
I love like he's like making his tea and he's like everything's all like portioned out, like moves. You're like, oh, he's gonna kill people with tea.
He's meticulous. He's savage. He's calculated.
Every time that he touched his watch, the theater kind of like giggled.
It's like they listened when we were like, they used the phrase noble savage, and they were like, we're just going to make a franchise around that term.
Yep.
That's exactly what he is in this.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, he's literally just like an older dude going around helping people in the beginning of the movie. He's a Lyft driver, for God's sakes.
He made an entire career out of playing the noble savage.
Yeah. What's the matter?
I gotta go to my apartment, sit on a computer.
Yeah, it's just research for hours. I can't decide if them disclosing in the trailer that she gets murdered makes the movie more boring while watching it.
Well, the whole sequel move of my old friend gets murdered and I seek revenge in action movies is like, it's so played out now that it's almost just like, let's make a sequel. We'll take the character from the first movie that was tertiary that we don't want to pay a full salary.
Who?
We'll kill them.
Oh, her, yeah.
Whoever did this have off chart skill sets.
This was done by a trained professional.
You ever see Star Trek? Very good. Call
911. Go time. Roll it down with a good rhyme and I run out with a full time. That's not really race with a bouquet. They say, can you go marry mine?
That was pretty sweet.
Oh, yeah, the harpoon?
Yeah.
They killed my friend.
Big fan of the harpoon kill.
So I killed each and every one of them. And the only disappointment is that I only get to do it once.
Oh, disappointment?
The craft services run out of grilled cheese.
I'll pick bags. Oh, man, craft services had uncrust.
All those books around? I figured you for some kind of teacher.
I'm a high-level paid government assassin.
That's not in the movie.
No.
Yeah, they had Uncrustables and Craft Services like a couple weeks ago.
What's that?
Those are like the little peanut butter.
Oh, you're not an
sandwiches.
Actor. You wouldn't know.
Yeah, you're not an actor. You wouldn't know Uncrust Services. Oh, that's where we get food. It's a peanut butter and jelly sandwich without the crust, but they're prepackaged.
Wow,
it was just phenomenal.
Really?
Yeah, there was just bites of heaven.
Did you miss your call time?
I actually got fired. I gained a bunch of weight. Pretty sweet trailer. Quick shout out to Jules in the booth. Bonjour, Juliette. I think this is the first time ever engineering our show.
Yeah, I think it's got to be. How you doing, Jules?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Of course.
Thank you for being here.
So let's get into the first part of the show, guys. Yeah. If you're watching or you're listening for the very first time, this is called Thesis Statement. It's your biggest, boldest thought about the film. It's the thing that if you discussed this movie at a party, you would bring up and you'd say, you know what? Here's the thing about this movie. This is the number one thing. It should be the best, the greatest, the only, the first, the last. Never, you know, this is my favorite movie in which Pedro Pascal plays a predictable government assassin.
With a mustache.
Mac, we were partners for 7 years. I was like, wow, you guys just took a soundbite from another bad movie.
The
huh?
Kaiju attack San Francisco. Oh, I actually watched King Arthur.
Yeah.
I told you that, right?
Yeah.
Because people have been saying that Charlie Hunnam's like good in that movie. It's a very good movie.
Oh, yeah?
It's not a very good movie.
And he's not very
good. He's fine in it, but it's not a very good. It's just really weird. I mean, I'd say watch it. But anyway.
So,
My thesis statement, I'm going to hop in first here, yeah, because I actually saw some rumblings of it online with our fans talking, and it was the thing that I think I said to you when I first when we first talked about the movie, was that this movie should have been the first movie.
Yeah, right.
And The Equalizer should have been the sequel.
Yep.
This movie seemed to care so much more about the dramatics and the storyline and actually, like, putting in the due diligence to making this a real story.
Yeah, right.
Whereas the first one was just like, oh, I know her from other movies. And he cares about her.
Yeah.
So now he's going to go kill everyone.
Yeah,
and then
right,
he's going to go to Russia at the very end of it and kill the main bad guy in his home. Why not? Like, that's the perfect setup for number two.
Yeah, right.
Right? Like,
for
He stopped driving Lyft. His leg got bad.
Yeah.
You know, he lost his license.
Stopped driving
And so
Lyft.
He just reads books in a coffee shop now.
Yeah.
And then he runs into, is it Chloe?
Grace Moretz in the
first
one.
Yeah, it is, right? Yeah. And then, so anyway, for me, it just, this movie just seemed like they did all the stuff, they pulled out all the stops you're supposed to pull out in the first one. And I think what they realized was, with the first one, they didn't do all that, and people still loved it.
Yeah.
And people still went and watched it, and they spent money. The problem is that everyone expected that out of the second one already, so no one went and watched it. Whereas if they would have done this the first time and then released Equalizer as the sequel, people would have went to the theaters the first time, watched this, and been like, damn, this is actually a pretty good movie. Fuqua seems to have found something. There's a good story here.
Yeah.
And then number two comes out, and it would have made twice as much money.
I think this movie will make quite a bit of money.
Yeah, it did okay. It made like 40-something million.
Yeah, yeah. It'll make enough. So I'll jump in with mine, and I kind of mentioned it in the trailer, and I think we've talked about it on the show before, but Robert McCall is the greatest embodiment of the Denzel Washington noble savage of all time. If you think about what it is, what this character is, and like what probably drew him to take it in the first place.
Right.
So when I say noble savage, this is a term my sister used with me when I was a kid, and she was explaining why people like Denzel Washington so much. And the whole idea is it's like these strong, prideful characters who are like willing to get their hands dirty, but also are like very wise and tactical. Mm-hmm. It's like they have some sense of honor. They're incredibly likable characters.
Yeah, and there's like, also there's usually also something flawed about them.
Yes.
Like something small.
Yeah, right. Now, Denzel is, of everyone I can think of, the person who has made a whole career out of playing that character. Like, most of his most loved characters, literally every character that he's ever played that, like, holds a gun is that character. They're always smart. They're always patient. They're always, like, pretty learned.
They are all those things. Especially, like, I think the Book of Eli was, like, one of the best embodiments of, like, just him being that.
Yeah, right. He's, like, precise. He's, like, his reputation precedes him usually. It's just your classic action movie character. But, like, Denzel Washington is that guy. And Robert McCall is the best because it's, like, and even in this movie more than the first one, you know, the first movie, he's, like, reading in a late-night coffee shop, and that's where he meets Chloe Grace Moretz. And, you know, she's like, a prostitute.
And, like, the situation calls upon him to be a noble savage. Whereas
he's, like, sympathetic to the fact that she's a prostitute. He doesn't judge her. He, like, sees the good in her. He's, like, reading, you know, he, like, reads really, he's reading books. I love, like, this is, like, one of my favorite things. You're, like, oh, he ordered a $40 book at a local bookstore and had it delivered instead of just using Amazon.
Yeah.
Like, but it's because he saved the daughter, so that's how he has, like, the relationship. He's kind of keeping watch.
Yeah. And he also owns the book already at his own house.
Yeah, I love that.
Nice twist at the end. Nice little Easter egg.
I also love that they have the sequence, and a lot of this I'm laughing about, but I actually really like. I like that there's a sequence of him driving Lyft just listening to people.
Same.
As they, like, go through their lives. Because, like, again, and once again, it plays into my thesis because that's so much of who this character is. He's interested in people. He likes to just observe life. He finds it interesting. He's not somebody who seeks out violence, but he resorts to violence when he feels he needs to equalize a situation.
Yeah, and you know, that moment of him driving Lyft, we saw it in the trailers. We all knew it was going to come in the movie, but it was still executed really well.
Yeah,
I was actually really impressed with the casting and the writing and the acting of that part.
Yeah,
there's so much of that throughout this movie.
Yeah, there's a lot of them, like, first tour, I'll be here to pick you up when you get back.
Yeah,
like, some of those moments were really well done, and I actually think it's the thing about this movie that I enjoyed the most, and I was watching a lot of the junket interviews with Denzel for this movie. I didn't get to do one. Our boy John Stephen Rook of The Outlaw did one, actually. He sat down with Denzel for this.
Oh, right.
And I watched it, and he actually asked some really good questions. He asked a question about the book that he's reading and what it symbolizes and everything. But I was thinking, like, I would love to sit down with Denzel and just say to him, like, your career has basically been connected by the works of two major directors, Tony Scott and Antoine Fuqua.
Yeah.
do you feel a sense of transcendence in the characters you play between the 10 or 11 movies you've done with those guys now? Because, like,
I would love to hear his answer to that question.
How could he not see the similarity between those two
bodies
of work?
He has to. And he has to, and he plays the same protagonist.
He does. And like, it's interesting, too, because they both go for the same thing. Less in the first movie, but specifically in this movie, like his relationship to the elderly man who's trying to find his sister, and the way that he takes his time with him, he listens to him. He really goes for those moments. And then, of course, like my favorite moment of the whole movie, which we'll talk about in a little bit. Fuqua really, really wanted to let this movie breathe a little more. So yeah. That's why it's a little longer.
It is a little too long, in my opinion. But yeah. not too long.
But he tries to build it out and make it a little more interesting. Mm-hmm. And you see this often with sequels, action sequels, especially, you know, John Wick 2 is very similar in that sense where, like, we need to build more of this assassin's world and we need to expand on his relationships and right. We need to see more. Like, you know, it can't just be the action. Of course, the action has to ratchet up, but, like,
that's an interesting correlation you just made there.
Yeah,
those two films.
Well, they just what they do is right. They literally look and they say, okay, how are we gonna make more money with the second movie? Because we're gonna have to pay him more money.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of how we're gonna make more money, how are we gonna make it different than the first movie while still keeping the identity? And so Taken 2 is the same way. The sequels of these movies are like, well, it's an action movie. You have to give us heightened action, so it has to be bigger.
And every action movie follows its own specific formula.
Right.
You know, like, this movie is the same as the first one. It's like, you see him be a badass here, he sees the people that needs help, he learns more about it, a few more moments of badassery, and then he takes him to the Home Alone scenario in the end of the movie.
Yeah, right.
Which I think is great.
Yeah.
So, guys, thank you so much for that part. Tuna, throw in your thesis statements in the chat. I think I saw a couple in here that were really good. There was one that someone mentioned about, like, Fuqua finding the balance finally between action and drama with this film and Denzel. And you and I talked about this a little bit last night, and I don't remember who made the point, but I do remember it being very poignant in that it was that Denzel, the reason that Tony Scott succeeded so much more, and it's not to say that he did it so much more, but that's more of like a personal opinion, just
because
we like Tony Scott movies more, is that Tony Scott succeeded at making Denzel the everyman.
Right.
He made him approachable. He made him relatable. Whereas Fuqua, it seems like he more and more tries to make him a badass.
Yeah.
The reason that Tony Scott succeeds, or I guess in that scenario wins, is because Denzel's already a badass.
Yeah, right.
In every situation. That guy could be ordering dinner in real life and you could be sitting next to him and it would still sound like the coolest order you've ever heard. So if you make him sound like the everyman, or if you make him more relatable, like, you're like, I could be that guy. I understand that guy. And he's already a badass. I think that's why those moments in Man on Fire and in Deja Vu and in The Taking, they just hit so hard for us. They just hit home.
Is there a fifth Denzel Fuqua collab I'm forgetting? Magnificent Seven, Equalizer 1, Equalizer 2, Training Day. Did they work together again somewhere in the 2000s that I'm forgetting?
I don't think so. I think that's all of them.
Shooter, Tears of the Sun, King Arthur, Brooklyn's Finest.
Two Guns.
Two. That's Baltasar Kormakur.
I hate that movie.
All right. So, but yeah, I agree with you. And I think the everyman versus sort of the badass is, like, that's clearly what they were going for differently. And I would say we'll get to this a little more when we talk about Overly Siege, Underly Siege, Properly Siege, Antoine Fuqua. But I still prefer the qualities that Scott pulled out of Denzel in his movies.
Yeah.
Because the moments that he pulls that are, like, really authentic, they don't feel sandwiched in the same way. Like, as much as I liked all the stuff in this movie that he did well, it still feels sandwiched between very formulaic action.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, Tony Scott, like, we've said before, like, the first hour of Deja Vu is, like, really interesting. It's, like, a really interesting action movie. It's well done. It's well shot. It's beautiful. It's, you know, Man on Fire has, like, great, great dramatic relationships. Like, that movie makes me cry at the end.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's a depth. But then again, and again, we'll talk about it in Fist Pump Moment in just a second, which is probably a good transition here to the next portion of the show, which is Fist Pump Moment. So, guys, if you're watching this, you're listening to this for the very first time, Fist Pump Moment is that moment where something happens in a movie. You're looking around, you're like, are you seeing this right now? Are you seeing this?
Yeah.
Oh, I get to watch the rest of this movie. This is so good.
There's like a hush or an energy that comes over the theater or the crowd. Like, you guys can all feel that moment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you
exactly.
go.
Exactly. And we both have pretty sweet ones.
Yeah. I mean, I think Fist Pump Moment, like, sometimes it's like an actual fist pump, which I do sometimes. Sometimes it's the moment in the theater when everybody's like, oh, Like,
oh,
yeah.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. And guys, I will tell you, I saw Mission Impossible Fallout, and I posted a tweet about it. We're doing it on the show next week. Talk about fist bump moments.
Oh, my God. I'm so mad that you didn't have a plus one for that and that you've just seen it. It's just been days that you've seen it now.
I've just seen the movie. Yeah. I'm so excited to talk about it next week.
And I'm just sitting at home watching a Star is Born trailer. I mean, Mission Impossible Fallout trailer.
Low-key, I've watched it 5 or 6 times since you told me.
A Star is Born?
I had seen the trailer once, but I've now seen it a few times.
I watched it like 30 times at the gym the other day.
Yeah, when he's like, hey, she's like, what? He's like, I just want to get another look at you.
We'll take another look at you.
The music in the trailer is great.
Yeah.
It's really good. I think all right, beautiful. So
what are we talking about?
Andrew's crying. All right, so fist pump moment, guys. This is that moment in the movie. And for me, my ultimate fist pump moment in this movie was the entire sequence. This picture on the screen here is exciting, but yeah, we're not there yet.
Yeah, I'm excited.
it's the sequence where he grabs Miles and he takes him out of like the drug den, and he's pissed because he's just lost his only friend. But he's like, before I go take care of business, I gotta go get this kid out of danger.
Yeah, he's like checking his watch.
He walks in, and you're like, is he just gonna kill all these dudes again? You're like, you're unsure what's gonna happen. He gets him. He's like, let's go, Miles. And he's got like the guns crossed.
Yeah.
And then he takes him downstairs, and Miles is like, what you doing, man? And he's like, and Denzel like gets real with him.
You even know who these people are?
Yeah. And I love that this is like the moment where Fuqua's like, all right, so here's the deal, dude. He's like, I've seen your work. I know what you've done. And this is the 5 minutes of the movie where we're going to get peak Denzel.
Look, man, I've seen Training Day.
Yeah. I directed Training Day. I don't know if you know that about me. But he's like, I need some combination of like Training Day Denzel, Malcolm X Denzel. I need like all that. Now just like yell a lot, say some inspirational shit, maybe like
throw in a couple of something about death, maybe.
Yeah, something about death, something about being a man, something like just like do whatever you gotta do and it'll be great. And Denzel's like, I got you.
Yeah, and he's like, spit a lot and get really close to him.
And he's like, and Fuqua's like, this was in your contract that we got contractually we get 5 minutes of this. So this is where we're burning it all in this one scene. And he like literally, Denzel's just like, oh, dude, there were so many good, and I'm laughing about this, but this is my favorite moment of the whole movie by far.
Yeah, because I was sitting there kind of laughing and like, oh.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I was like, I was inspired. And he grabs him and he's like, he puts the gun in his mouth. He's like, what you got, killer? What you got, son? And
he's you don't know what death looks like.
Like, man is not spelled G-U-N. Like, he has so many good lines.
He says that?
Man
is not spelled G-U-N?
Yes.
Man, I must have been so in the zone.
Oh, dude, and he has a couple lines about, like, it all happened so fast that I was like, maybe I should illegally record this, but I was like, nah, that's a bad idea. But I was like, I'm trying to find it this morning, like, anything, the script, whatever I could find. Couldn't find it. Those of you watching or listening, like, know what we're talking about. It's so, like, inspirational. There's even a line that he throws in about something about, like, this isn't about like the white man not giving you a chance.
There's so much social commentary in that like 2 minutes.
So much. And like it's just great. And
gotta pull yourself up out.
Yeah, he's like, you know, you a killer, you know, and then he like as he walks away, he's like, but Mr. McCall, why me? He's like, why not you? I was like, oh
yeah.
Oh, I want to run for public office.
But doesn't he say, but why me again?
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, but why me?
I don't know what he says.
I can't remember what he says.
And the whole time, we're just sitting there just like
what about the people upstairs?
All with guns who like would immediately come after you. Denzel doesn't care.
I love it. They're just up there just like, do you hear them yelling down there? He sounds furious.
He sounds furious. Was that his dad?
Is that his dad or his uncle? Yeah. I want to go down there and kill him, but I'm kind of scared.
Oh, so
yeah,
good.
It was a very, very good
that
moment.
That scene was my favorite in the movie.
Yeah. For me, I mean, God, yours just kind of blew it out of the water because it was such a great moment. Mine is very subtle, and it's the moment when Denzel goes into kill mode.
Yeah.
It's when he gets the phone call. And what I love is, like, because, you know, as an actor, you know, every phone call in a movie is fake.
Right.
There's no one on the other line.
Yeah.
So Denzel is, like, slowly having this reveal, right? And you see it when he stopped, because he's like, oh, how's it going, man?
He's like, hey, Bill Pullman, what's up?
Oh. And then his face gets real serious.
Yeah.
And then he like gets up and walks and he leaves his book. That's how you know it's serious. He leaves his book. He doesn't even say anything to Miles and he just keeps walking. He's like, yo, Mr. McCall, your book. And he just keeps walking. And then he goes in his, he goes to DC really quickly, but then he goes back to his apartment and just hacks. And he's like knocking on the door, like leaves the book. He's just hacking away, like researching.
Yeah.
And for some reason, I just love that he went into kill mode. And then he went into his apartment and just like, hold up. I loved it.
Yeah, he's not answering the door. He's not doing anything.
But it was also just the fact that like, that was, it's like a super badass look.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's a very, like, it's a great talent to have as an actor.
Oh, dude, he's made a whole career off of it.
Into going into kill mode.
Oh, my God. Yeah. It's like, yeah, it's amazing. This movie has a lot of fist bump moments. I mean, there's some really great lines. There's like, I mean, his kills are sweet.
Yeah, the when he does go into the crack house or whatever, and he like, the elevator dude, I think it is, and he like opens, he kicks him, and he like smacks his head against the wall really quick. I'm like, ah, God, that would hurt so bad.
One of my favorites too is because you know throughout the movie, like he's killing different people, but a lot of them are like trained killers or they're like badasses.
Right.
I love when he goes up to the like lawyer's den or whatever, like the just whatever who these guys are. Mm-hmm. They're all like pieces of crap. They've just like raped this girl. Yeah. And he's just like, none of you are gonna get out of here. But like I'm sitting there just being like, these guys are just like they're just like doing drugs and have money. Like these, they don't even stand a fucking chance.
No, like they're
like you're gonna kill all of them. You could like use your left hand, you'd kill them all.
I love when he like because he doesn't kill any of them.
I think he
no because he doesn't.
He snaps the one guy's neck.
Yeah, so you watch him snap his neck and he does it just enough because the guy's eyes are still open. He's like, oh, he like breaks his neck but doesn't kill him.
Oh, interesting.
Which I thought was super awesome because I don't know if all those people should have died. I don't know exactly what happened to that girl. But what I do know is that he knew that they needed to take a severe amount of pain
they
and punishment.
To pay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And severe I thought that amount. Was super sweet. He like broke that one guy's arm like six times.
Yeah. He like horrible. He like wrecked those dudes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And they deserve to be wrecked.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, all right. We are going to continue moving through the show, guys. This is Star Profiles. It is the next portion of the show where we talk about an actor's career, where they were in the making of this film. Denzel versus Pedro Pascal. We'll start with Pedro. So a lot of people know Pedro Pascal.
So we'll pull up the image of a Denzel character profile here. Are you doing Pedro first?
Pedro first.
Pedro, sorry about that.
And, you know, Pedro is known for a couple shows. He, I think, became most famous for Narcos.
Yeah, definitely.
But prior to Narcos, he was known as a character whose name I'm forgetting right now in Game of Thrones. He was a very, very well-liked character. Yeah. In Game of Thrones, who I'm just somebody in the chat's going to tell me because I'm forgetting. He's like a super sweet swordsman.
Swordsman.
Yeah, he's great. And then obviously Narcos was a big deal. And then he just shows up in a lot of other stuff. He's like, he's been in a bunch of stuff now. He was in Kingsman, The Golden Circle, Prospect, The Great Wall.
Which I tried to watch yesterday.
Yeah.
Can't find it.
The Great Wall?
It must have been that bad that no one out there is like, well, just put it up online for people to legally stream.
It made some money.
It was really hard for me to find. I couldn't find it.
Matt Damon with the ponytail?
Yeah. The other day I was walking by and someone's like, yeah, that guy, he's like the cheap, he's like the poor man's Matt Damon. I was completely just walking by. I go, you know, Jesse Plemons? They're like, oh my God, yeah, that's the guy. So I felt really bad for Jesse Plemons in that moment. So Pedro pops up in The Great Wall, Kingsman, The Golden Circle, and Prospect. And I really like him in Narcos.
Yeah.
But I do feel like his buddy, Boyd Holbrook, has gotten such a better career after Narcos. And I think he's found, really what it is, I think he's found his own as an actor, whereas Pedro just feels like he's an actor being placed into roles.
Yeah.
And he doesn't really own them. Even in the Golden Circle, when he played whiskey or tequila or whatever he was, like a whiskey, I think it was whiskey.
Maybe whiskey.
Channing Tatum's tequila.
Yeah,
I think. He was just kind of whatever, and he's also a bad guy in that one too, right?
Yeah,
yeah. So
yeah, he totally. He's like he's been cast into these like I'm slightly not trustworthy.
Prince
kind of a good guy.
Oberyn.
Yeah, Prince Oberyn. That's what it is. So who, by the way, has a spoiler alert for you? A savage
he dies.
Death.
Yeah,
yeah. Everybody dies in that show.
Well, yeah, exactly.
Literally.
That's why. Yeah, I do know that about the show.
So that's Pedro, and you know he must be. I'm guessing Pedro Pascal is probably like 44.
Yeah, he looks like he's mid 40s,
right around there.
So for him,
yeah, he's having a good career.
Yeah,
he's having a great career. He could still, and I think he's a good enough actor. I never watched Narcos, but I heard he's really good.
He's great in Narcos.
Yeah. Now on the flip side, we have Denzel Washington. His last three films, Roman J. Israel Esquire,
never
Fences,
saw it.
Magnificent Seven. I saw all three of these movies.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I did. I watched Roman J., well, 80% of it on an airplane recently.
How was it?
It's like, he was nominated for Best Actor for it.
Well, because it's like, one thing I was going to say when we were watching the trailer for this is that, like, it's because like, Denzel hasn't done, like, I mean, Fences, obviously, is, like, a very strong powerhouse performance, but, like, a character.
Well, Roman J. is. I mean,
that's what I mean. Yeah.
Yeah, there's his last two, and he was nominated for Best Actor both. Like, he's kind of a little bit on the upswing in that regard again.
Yeah.
Roman J. is pretty forgettable. It's fine. I think that there's a there's an issue that we run into with iconic actors and actresses after a certain age, where you've seen them do something for so long, no matter how good they are, it's super, super hard to see anything other than that's Denzel Washington playing a quirky lawyer.
Yeah, exactly.
And like, that's what I struggled with that movie, was like, he's doing a good job. I just think that another actor playing this role would probably be more convincing, because like right now this feels like Denzel trying to play a weird character.
For sure. I understand that.
And, you know, Fences is a super slow movie. Like, Fences is, I think...
Did you like it or no?
No.
It was too slow for you?
He's great. There's moments in Fences that I really like.
She's great, from what I gather.
Yeah, yeah. It's not a movie that I ever would want to watch again. I turned it off 20 minutes in the first time. It took me like a couple different times to get through the whole movie.
Right, right.
But I mean, he's obviously one of the all-time great actors. So like, seeing him do stuff like that, if you're in that right state of mind, is great.
Have you watched Lincoln yet?
No.
Are you going to? I know, I hate that movie so
eventually
much. I'm like so mad.
It'll be part of a specific Schmodown training regimen at some point.
I'm just angry at that movie for the rest of my life.
Movie games. I like, this is like so exciting, I'm not gonna say anything about it, but like, my training regimen for playing against John Steven Rocha in the Schmodown is so good.
Yeah,
I'm not admitting to anything of what it is, but I'm just so proud of it.
I mean, I think that's a pretty good segue.
Yeah. That sounds pretty good to me.
Yeah.
So we are going to get into the next bit of our show, guys. The first thing we're going to do is tell you guys about our Facebook groups.
Yes.
We have two of them. There's one for Action Movie Anatomy, this show. It was started by wonderful fans of our show, and it is moderated by those fans. It's about 1,500 people who watch and listen to the show. You guys can go find that on Facebook. Also, there's a fan page for the Action Army that is fast approaching 1,000 members.
Yes.
For our characters on the Schmodown. We have a couple thank yous. We already shouted out our Brigadier Generals, Paul Danuzzo and John Goetz. You guys will be getting shout outs every show from here to eternity, yeah, as long as you're in the ranks of
Brigadier General. I mean,
Francis X. Hummel.
Good Lord. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but also, we wanted to throw out a giant thank you in the same segment to Tobias Mustad, who's another brand new general,
yeah,
which is really exciting for us that we have this many people at the high level of the Patreon that are excited.
Yeah, and did we shout out Brienne last week?
We'll shout her out again.
Yeah, we'll shout her out again. Brienne Chandler, a good friend of ours, has also made her way to the general ranking. Our first female general in the Action Army.
And while we're at it, let's throw it out to Andrew Hayes as well.
Yeah,
just because
Andrew, our boy.
That's like literally everybody at the general and above level, and we want to thank all you guys because you have made a giant, giant impact on what is the Patreon. Again, stay tuned after our next segment. We'll talk a little bit more about what the Patreon is. But coming up right now, we have a brand new segment. It's called
Schmodown Corner.
By way of technical Andrew.
I think his balls just dropped.
All right, Jules, we can cut the segue.
Oh, the ball's dropping. Way to go, Jason Inman. Guys, I don't know if you see what I see here, but it's a gigantic... it's gigantic.
Let's make sure we like lower that so that the frame can fully capture it.
Like that?
Yeah, there you go.
I go all the way back up.
You're just going to do some curls with your trophy?
Yeah, just do that. And then what it says on the bottom, it says, Andrew Guy, a.k.a. Goat Killer, Movie Trivia Schmodown 2018 Moment of the Year. Guys, this was made by Nick Gilmore in the Action Army, who we actually shouted out at the top of the show, but we had to give a little more love. This is a ridiculously gigantic trophy. I don't know what I'm going to do with it.
You guys are wondering,
it.
Did Andrew repurpose his soccer trophy when he's 12 and make this up? He didn't. This arrived in an offensively large box
today. It was so large. The box is over there. It's taking up the entire couch. I had no idea. He had sent me a picture and it was small.
Yeah,
in the picture it looked very small. I thought it was going to be like this big.
This is probably like the size of box that like Denzel's sponsor Tommy Bahama gear shows up to set in.
Yeah,
like,
there's only one shirt in it.
Yeah, in front of this TV here, the main TV.
One in, where the desk is.
Oh, down here.
Oh, down.
That's a good idea.
That big, guys.
There we go. All right, hold on.
Let's see what we can do.
Got it.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So while Andrew presents this enormous trophy. It's exciting. One more time, just a giant thank you to Nick Gilmore. All right, Schmodown Corner. Let's talk about what's going on here, guys. It's a brand new segment. Some of you who listen or watch the show are also fans of Collider's Movie Trivia Schmodown, where Andrew and I compete as Team Action. Some really, really big stuff going on. So some things coming up. First of all, I am going to be playing John Steven Rocha. And at the same time that's going to be happening, there was another announcement. And that is that Andrew Guy is going to be playing against Mark, Yodi, Riley.
Yes.
Holy.
Ben and I have literally taken leaps and bounds in the Schmodown over the last few months, and we're playing two former champions one-on-one.
Yeah, there's only a few champions the league's ever seen, and we're getting to one-on-one play them. Also, they're two members of the Horsemen.
Yep.
Drew just beat Merle. I mean, there's a lot of really exciting stuff here. So Drew playing Riley, me playing Roka. That's huge stuff. Again, well, when we get to the Patreon stuff, we can talk a little more about that, because there'll be a more built-out conversation there.
And another huge thing coming up is this massive KO Anarchy tournament where you and I are going to be split up.
Corruption. Yeah, we're going to have us. So we're not going to get to play on the same
team. I mean, unless we somehow get put on the same team, but I don't think they would ever allow that
to
happen.
Well, it's randomly drawn, so I suppose, like, it could be.
That does sound pretty team action.
Yeah, it'd be pretty sweet, actually. if we find out when they draw the names that we're on the same team and everybody else is, that'd be so sweet. Team action, just like facing off against the entire league.
Yeah, be amazing.
So that's a thing. There's the corruption tournament. That's a. That'll be, from what I understand, the tournament, and the winner of that tournament, I think we'll play at Spectacular, because I think probably the way it matches up, I don't think we start shooting any of that stuff till the fall.
No. And then, yeah, I think it'll be in the Spectacular, and whoever wins that will be, I think, up for the champions.
No, I think the Spectacular, there's usually a title match, team title match at the Spectacular.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. Whoever
be the champion.
Yeah, goes through the whole Anarchy tournament will be the champion.
Yeah, exactly. So, and then currently going on right now, we also have the Inner Geekdom tournament. So I watched the Mara Emma match.
Yep.
I also watched some of the Donica Kalinowski match. So on the IG front, you know, Mara's definitely a rising star. She's exciting. She's really good.
Yeah, Donica is I'm a huge Donica fan. He had a rough game. That does happen. Hopefully he'll be able to bounce back.
Did you see his post about it?
I did.
Yeah. And
I did see his post.
It's a giant shout out to Donica, because, you know, Mark's a longtime friend of ours, and it's also somebody who has been part of this network. Yeah, he was the engineer of the show for a year.
Yeah.
He went online and he openly talked about the fact that he had a panic attack that day, and just sort of didn't realize that that was something that he was going through. And it's a huge amount of respect that I have for Mark to come out and talk about that publicly.
Yeah, absolutely, man, because you and I both know, look, there's always anxiety the day of the match.
Always.
Whether it's overbearing or not, whether you can keep it in line or not is another fact of the matter. But it's a tough day. There's a lot of pressure. There's a lot of lights, and there's a lot of people. So props to Donica for going out there and fighting. You know, Brianne's talked about this before, too, is you go out there and you fight, and people rip you apart when you have a bad day.
Yep.
Which just fuels the fire. So shout out to you guys. Always love seeing you guys compete. We love everyone in the Action Army. Thank you so much for your support. And that is going to do it for our new segment, the Schmodown Corner.
Yeah, Schmodown Corner. Wrapped up. All right, off comes sunglasses.
Jesus, I was like, it's so dark in here.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I can't read my outline.
All right, so the last thing we want to talk about here before we get back to the regularly scheduled programming is that we have a Patreon, patreon.com/teamaction. It is for additional content that Andrew and I make. Outside of here, we sit in front of a giant Nicolas Cage banner. We talk about all things movies, movie news, Action Army, Schmodown related. And for a minimum of $1 a month, you guys get that additional content. We actually just hit a milestone last week.
We catapulted past it.
Yeah, we had a goal, and we hit that goal. So now you guys are going to be getting 2 videos a week exclusively exclusively to the Army. So check that out, patreon.com/teamaction. There will be a full video coming out, like probably 20 minutes behind the scenes, talking about our matchup predictions coming up with the Roka and Riley matches that we expect to see. And, you know, kind of our preparation for it. We'll be talking about that behind closed doors. So get excited for that. Let's get back to the show.
All right, so we're going to hop into production development next, guys. We're going to try to somewhat breeze through this because you're pretty familiar with the players. Richard Wenk, who also wrote the first Equalizer film, he's known for writing Expendables 2, Jack Reacher 2, Magnificent 7, and his original script that put him on the map was 16 Blocks, 16 Blocks starring Bruce Willis and Mos Def, I believe.
That sounds right. Yeah.
Sounds right, right?
16 Blocks, that would have been like, what, like 2004 probably?
2006.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, the only other interesting thing about Richard Wenk is that he actually didn't start his career until he was 50. So guys, never give up, never surrender.
I remember when we've talked about him in the past. That's really, really
cool. Thing.
Yeah, he's in now with sort of the new age action crew.
Yeah, I mean, all those movies are, I mean, Jack Reacher 2 actually turned on last night as I was going to sleep. We enjoyed Mag 7. Equalizer's been good. So I'm going to let you take it away on your boy Antoine Fuqua, because I know you love him.
Well, Fuqua, I think, you know, the thing to really mention here about him, just to be quick, is that he started out as a music video director. So there's a prevalent hip hop theme in a lot of his movies. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a guy that had worked in music videos in that part of the music business for a long time.
Did Tony Scott do anything in music videos ever? Or was he did, right?
I believe he did.
Okay.
Commercials and music videos.
Yeah, yeah.
At least commercials, maybe not music videos. But Training Day was obviously the breakout film from Antoine Fuqua, which he will never be shy to tell you in his trailers. And throughout the years, he did a lot of different stuff. Everything from Tears of the Sun to Shooter, King Arthur. He did two Equalizer movies, Southpaw. Magnificent Seven most recently. Definitely a guy who works well with Denzel Washington, and definitely a guy who exists somewhere at the intersection of action and drama, and a strong presence, I think, of sort of like black culture in his movies. That's like a very, you know, he's one of the actually biggest, probably highest grossing black directors we have right now.
Oh, definitely. Right? I mean, him and Coogler and
F. Gary Gray.
Gary Gray have got to be the three heavier hitters, I would think.
Yeah, Spike Lee's movies don't really make money anymore.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, he's obviously having a pretty amazing career. We've talked about him at length. So I think, you know, rather than doing producers, because it's just Fuqua, Denzel, and a few others, we're going to do a segment that we like to do called Overly Sieged, Underly Sieged, Properly Sieged. And this is a segment where we talk about somebody, are they overrated, underrated, or properly rated? With Antoine Fuqua, which is funny because I've complained about him so much on this
for
show.
For
literally years.
But we've literally
come full circle.
We have. There's no... Is there something on me?
No, why?
I'm looking at me. Are you just looking at my trophy?
Looking at the Star Is Born trailer. Andrew's crying again.
I am crying. I think you're beautiful. So for me, I'm going to hop in first because I have a much... my opinion of Fuqua was never as strong as yours.
Much less tumultuous relationship.
Yes, exactly. Volatile. God, I think I can only say he's properly sieged. I think for me that feels appropriate because, look, he's still getting to make movies.
Right.
He's still getting to make movies with Denzel Washington. Now, are any of them going to be Academy Award winning movies? I don't know. When Southpaw came out, that's what everyone seemed to think.
Yeah.
But it didn't, and it wasn't. And for me, it actually kind of fell flat. I actually really liked Magnificent Seven.
Yeah.
I was kind of shocked at how good it was.
It's like a lot more violent than we expected.
Yeah, and like...
Pratt's really good.
Pratt has a dark turn. Yeah, it's cool. So... I think he's properly sieged, and the reason I say that is because I don't think you can be under sieged and be making the movies that he gets to make with the amount of freedom that he has with the people that he gets to make them with. And I don't think he's overrated because it's not like you're out there talking about him every year winning Best Director, Best Picture, like this next Fuqua film. Now, for the 5 years, or honestly even the decade following Training Day, that's what it was. It was the director of Training Day brings you this movie that's going to blow the shit out of your brain and you're going to win an Oscar. And it was like, never happened again. It never happened again.
I'm going to jump in and say that he's overly sieged.
Okay, perfect. So,
and I thought about this a lot because, like,
ends.
I pretty much, you know, and maybe I'm shooting myself in the foot because Fuqua, I've talked about him so much. He's somebody I'd love to talk to. I'd love to sit down and interview him.
You love him now.
Yeah, I do. I really do. But I think culturally he is overly sieged. And the reason I say so is I still think there's a stigma attached to Antoine Fuqua's movies that on any given year he could make something that's like a contender, like an awards contender,
just like Southpaw.
Yeah, and I think that that notion is not backed up by anything. It's only backed up by the fact that Training Day at the time that it came out was like a pretty big movie. And I like Training Day, but I don't think it's very good. I don't think it's bad. I just don't think it's very good.
It's aged interestingly.
And that's like the crown jewel. I enjoy Southpaw. A big shout to Richard Eric Jarvie because I know he's a big fan of that movie.
Yeah, we do know Richard loves it.
I love Southpaw. Like I really enjoyed watching that movie. I thought Jake Gyllenhaal was great in it. I actually like Forrest Whitaker in that movie a lot. I'm not making that up, right? He's in that movie?
Yeah, he's in it.
He's the trainer.
Yeah.
So I really enjoy those movies, but on the whole, like, the movies he makes are Shooter. They're, like, movies like that. So it's, you know, even the Equalizer franchise, these are great, but it's like, but anybody other than, like literally put Michael Jai White instead of Denzel Washington, and these movies aren't good enough for Netflix.
Exactly. And the first Equalizer was only successful because of, like, the interesting story, Denzel being a badass, and, like, fun action, which I know that partially has to do with the director, but almost any director could do that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the difference is that Safe House sucks, and, like...
so bad.
And, like, it has Denzel, and it wasn't...
And Ryan Reynolds.
And it wasn't successful, so, like, maybe that's a great reminder.
Who directed that?
It's directed by Eduardo
Zwick.
No, it's directed by like a Spanish director who I'm forgetting. It's
okay. Edward, it doesn't matter.
Damn, I need to know that.
Someone will write in the chat.
Yep. So, all right. And anyway, that's what I say. I think that he is still perceived in a way that he is like in the cream of the crop, and it's because of the box office receipts of his movies. That's the reason.
Yeah.
It's because his movies make money, and I think the world leans into that more than they need to, and that's why I think when I say overrated, I don't think he's overrated for what he is, because I love his movies at this point.
I just think the fact that every time he makes a movie, if it's even somewhat legitimate, people are like, this could win an Oscar. It could be that great of a movie.
Or
it's an Antoine Fuqua film, so you know it's going to be of this caliber.
Exactly. Like, it's like you, like people have some notion that it's going to be of quality, where like, I think that they're good movies and they're entertaining movies, but the most relevant thing about them is that they're entertaining.
I mean, go back and watch Training Day. I challenge you guys to do that. For the most part, I think I like that movie more than most people. I know I like it more than Ben, but it has aged poorly. Speaking of aging poorly, let's talk about some of these who wore it bests, because
this is exciting. Can we talk about where this inspiration came
from? Yes, please. So when Ben and I were watching the trailer for this movie, and as you guys saw, there is a very interesting outfit that Denzel wears in the beginning of the film.
It's like he's got like a beard
and glasses
and this like white it's like a skull cap of some kind.
Yeah, I mean, we for lack of a better term, it's kind of like a turban type thing, but we don't know exactly what it is, if he's supposed to be Egyptian or from Istanbul, or we're not sure.
Yeah, because I'm not going to speak on it, but what I do know is that it is peculiarly similar to an outfit worn by Wesley Snipes in the trailer for The Art of War, which we've talked about this one shot at length.
Wow.
Now, there's a great moment in this trailer where Donald Sutherland says to him, "I don't believe we've met." And Wesley Snipes is like, "We still have.
We still haven't, sir." Because he shakes his hand.
Because he's like undercover.
Because he is. So let's hop back to Denzel really quick, Jules.
Who wore it best? Oh, nope. That's Michelle Pfeiffer.
Ooh, which we got coming up next.
I'm going to say just right off the bat, I go Snipes.
I do too. I 100% do too. Snipes rocks it. Yeah. So Denzel looks good, but it's like, that's Denzel Washington.
It also is relatively clear to me that they shot that scene last, because like, I think that was probably a reshoot because he's bald at this point.
Yeah, his head's shaved. Yeah. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, unless it's just supposed to be a different time. So that's probably like, they either shoot this at the beginning or at the end, but I think probably a reshoot makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, and then we'll hop over to Snipes.
Yeah, I think that the Snipes picture, truthfully, I've still never watched Art of War.
First of all, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
Maybe. Second of all, Michael Biehn in it is fantastic.
Michael Biehn's in Art of War?
He's the bad guy.
Oh.
Yeah. Ooh, oops, spoiler alert, it's a twist. Wesley Snipes just owns it there. I think it's really the top. Top, really, they went the extra mile with costume design there. So that was a fun one. We're going to hop into a little bit more serious of one. Guys in the chat, let's see. Yeah, they love it. They love it. We're going to hop into a Catwoman one, because this one's actually a real thing. So Catwoman was...
the one we just did was not a real thing.
Yeah, this is not a real... I mean, it kind of was. So we got Michelle Pfeiffer, the original Catwoman in
classic,
our minds.
92,
I was in love with her as a young man. I
mean, she looks amazing as Catwoman. Everybody remembers her. They remember how she looks more than how she acted.
But she was still scary as shit.
Yeah.
That's what I remembered. So then next we have probably the worst iteration, which is Halle Berry.
Yeah, which I watched a scene from the other day Byron Mann, who's in Skyscraper, who I interviewed last week, was in Catwoman. I was trying to find a scene of him in Catwoman.
Yeah.
So I had to watch some YouTube clips. No success finding him in that film, but I did find her jumping around with some very bad CGI. This movie, when I used the phrase unwatchable,
it's
correct.
It's unwatchable and appallingly bad.
Appallingly bad.
But I do have to say, she does have the best outfit.
I mean, that outfit is banging. And then we're going to go to the third outfit,
Do you think that if you were to change the mask, everything other than the mask, if you had made the mask like, it's just like less embarrassing, it would have worked?
Maybe. Yeah, because I kind of like the rest of it.
Yeah, it's pretty hot. Yeah.
So then the third one we have is Miss Hathaway, or what's her real name?
In this film, Selena Kyle.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
I think it's her name in all of them.
It is. Yeah.
It is.
Do you have a favorite? I think it's the same as mine.
What is it?
Anne Hathaway.
I love Anne Hathaway's Catwoman.
Me too.
And I think it's the glasses and the ears thing.
Yeah.
I don't know why I like that so much.
Yeah.
But I really loved what they did with Anne Hathaway. And they didn't try to make her too sexy. Now, don't get me wrong, she's stunning and she looks amazing in it.
Yeah.
But it wasn't overly sexualized.
Yeah, I love Anne Hathaway as Catwoman. I thought, like, she just kills it. Like, in that scene
she
in the beginning when she's the...
screaming.
Well, that scene's amazing.
That's my favorite.
I was gonna say the one that I love is the beginning when she's in the Wayne Manor and she's got the things and she like, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mr. Wayne.
And then she kicks his legs out. Yeah, she jumps, out, like, the jumps window, out the window. Just takes stuff off the arms and drives off.
Yes, she's so awesome. Sick.
That movie's good.
All right, and then our very last one for who wore it best. We've got. Look, Ben and I have both we've both gained weight and lost weight in our time, and we know as you get older, it is harder to stay in shape. So first, we have to see who wore it best with the extra pounds. We got our good friend, Mr. Kilmer.
Yeah, Val Kilmer. I hope you pulled the picture.
Oh, of course I did.
Dieter Von Kahn
from MacGruber.
When Kilmer showed back up in this period of his career, in the 06 period, as Chubby Kilmer, I was a big fan. I mean, he really... Deja Vu, wonderful. This movie, wonderful. He vacillates a little bit, obviously. He gains and loses weight, but a big fan of larger Kilmer.
Oh, absolutely. He's amazing as Dieter Von Kahn. And then second, we have,
at Crow.
Crow and the Nice Guys.
He's barely fitting in the frame.
Yeah, Fatsweaty Crow is what we refer to him as here, because in the movie, he is, like, very often sweaty. This is, like, a period of his career.
He's always uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I had a conversation with someone recently telling me stories that there was when he showed up to set that they weren't happy about the weight that he had gained, but they just had to move forward in production anyway. Yeah.
That he was even bigger when he showed up to set than he was in the auditions, which was already too big.
Yeah, but little did they know, it makes the character that much better, in my opinion.
The best.
So my answer is that Crow wears it best here.
I have to split. This is our split decision. I have to go with Val Kilmer
with Dieter.
I just love Von Kahn so much. I remember him showing up in Deja Vu and being like, damn. But then in MacGruber, I was like, wow.
It works.
He's owned it.
Yeah, I do think it's funny how that can happen. Like, weight on a character. Like, we've seen it happen with comedians a lot of the time, where a bigger comedian will lose weight, and they will sort of, like, lose some of their humor.
It's such a weird thing.
Yeah, there's something about actors and actresses with gaining and losing weight. Like, it can really change the way that they're able to, like, communicate their character. Like,
the way they're perceived.
Emotionally, like, you don't react to them the same way sometimes when they're bigger or skinnier. It's weird.
Yeah, it is weird.
But I react to Crow in a totally different way at a larger size than I did at, like, Maximus size. He is Maximus size here.
Yeah. And people seem to be agreeing with you that Crow took that. So, guys, that was our news segment. Who wore it best? I hope you guys enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun for us.
Yes. We're going to continue moving through. We don't have a lot of time left, so I say let's do a quick box office and critical.
Yeah, I'll just breeze through it. So, Sony Columbia produced $62 million to make this movie. It opened July 20th, 2018. It grossed $39 million domestic and, again, only $3 million worldwide, which is this crazy anomaly with Denzel movies worldwide and how they just don't do that well. I'm sure obviously that number will go up exponentially because it's only the first week.
In some territories.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
But even then, it still just seems crazy low. For a grand total of $42 million its opening week, it was number one at $36 million. Now, this movie has a 7.2 on IMDb, which is, I believe, higher than its first film. But then its Rotten Tomatoes scores are a 51 by all critics, a 41 by top, and a 76 by audience.
Yep. Yeah, I think those scores are pretty fair. 7.2 feels a little high. This feels like this. I really enjoyed this movie, but this feels like it's probably somewhere between the three Rotten Tomatoes scores to me. Like, yeah. I would give this movie probably a little closer to like a 66 or 67.
Yeah, I could see like 68 to 70 for me. Probably. Yeah,
seems a little more legitimate. All right, so let's get into our next segment here, guys. This is going to be favorite line, your favorite line in the film, the thing that stuck with you the most. Pretty self-explanatory here. What do you got?
So I always try really hard in new movies because you can't, bust your phone out to remember. But the one that stuck with me the most, and there's a couple, but the one that stuck with me the most was, there's two types of pain.
Yeah.
Pain that hurts and pain that alters. And I was like, ooh, that sounds horrible.
That sounds horrifying.
I want to know nothing about the second one.
Yeah.
And don't even do the first one to me. I used to think as a kid, if I got like captured as a POW and tortured, like I could hang it.
Yeah.
I could do it.
Yeah.
The other day, I was fixing something and a bit of a staple went underneath my nail.
Yeah.
And I wanted to scream in pain and agony, and it hurt for about 15 to 20 minutes. I would not do well in any torture situation.
Mm.
Especially not one that alters.
Especially not one that alters. So, guys, don't kidnap Andrew and try to torture him for my training regimen, the Schmodown.
Please don't.
Yeah. My favorite line in this film has to be the one that they showed in the trailer. It's just like, because I guess I didn't see it in the trailer.
Oh, so good.
So it's when he's in the crack house and the guy's like, yo, who are you? And he's like, I'm your father. Your mother just forgot to tell you. I was like, ow! Oh! Ow!
You fit so many words into that quick sentence.
Yeah, it was such a great rebuttal.
Yeah, that was pretty excellent. I also loved... you can give me a 5-star rating.
Yeah.
Not for me, for Amy.
Yeah.
Or for her.
Yeah, it's so good.
Yeah, the other one, I'm killing each and every one of you. The only disappointment is that I only get to do it once.
Yeah,
that was really a good one. That was a good line. Yeah, so AMA question, I think we're going to have to skip today. We actually kind of talked about the one that I did want to talk about, which was like the Antoine Fuqua and the Tony Scott difference.
Yeah.
Really quickly, Josh Ryan did say, if there was any movie that Denzel could have made a sequel of in his career other than Equalizer, what would it have been? And for me...
It probably would have been one of the well, it couldn't have been Man on Fire because he obviously dies in that movie.
I know, that's for me, I want to see the Man on Fire prequel.
Yeah, that would have been great. I think that would have been really great. I also could see like any of the Tony Scott, any of like the great Tony Scott movies, I would have loved. I also think probably an Unstoppable sequel could have been pretty fun.
Deja Vu 2.
Oh, Deja Vu. Deja Vu again.
Yeah, so those
more Deja Vu.
A lot of Deja Vus.
Yeah, this is funny. So all right, guys, we are going to move past AMA question today. No Cage versus Cruise this week, but there are three action movie categories: totally ridiculous, totally legitimate, and ridiculously legitimate. I don't think I really need to explain what those are anymore. We've done it so many times.
What do you think?
This movie's totally ridiculous.
It has to be, right?
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, there's so much we didn't get to talk about with this movie. Like we like missed all the entire ending shootout, like most of the action sequences.
Yeah, the harpoon through the head is sweet.
Yeah, the harpoon kill was great. But like, I think just like all of it, and like there's so many moments in this movie where there was moments that I loved, but there was also so many moments where I was like, Pedro Pascal's like, I was your partner for 7 years, Mac, and you're like, that's like a line from MacGruber. Like,
yeah, it is a line from MacGruber.
It's like, you're like, that's just, there's so many things about this that are just the action movie thing. And it's like, this is just an action movie with an action movie script and action movie tropes. And everything about this is like silly.
I liked the, when we were talking yesterday, it was like, what is the team doing going to this hometown on an island across a bridge in a hurricane? Just wait.
Yeah, just wait.
Just wait on the other side until he has to come across the bridge and kill him.
Yeah, exactly.
Or just don't go into a hurricane.
Yeah, 100%.
First of all, Rob Cohen directed that scene. I kept thinking about Rob throughout that scene. I was like, man, Rob would have brought so many Wynn fans in.
Oh my God, Hurricane Heist. Love Rob Cohen. Huge fan. I off camera, I have some stories to tell you about entertainment studios that I heard over at Comic-Con.
Yeah.
The studio that paid all that money for that movie.
I can't wait.
That also like paid for Chappaquiddick and 47 Meters Down and all these movies. Like, just like...
We're doing The Meg on this show.
Yeah, totally.
And I want to do The
that's
Meg.
That's their next movie.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, good. This is amazing.
Yeah. So, all right, guys. It sounds like we are in agreement that Totally Ridiculous. We've just got one segment left on the show this week, and that's called
The Pitch. Ooh, that was a little high.
Yeah.
A little high.
We've got an exciting one next week.
Oh, my
God. Mission Impossible Fallout!
That's a climbing in MI2.
So good.
Yeah, I can't wait.
You saw in the trailer that he's climbing.
I've seen everything in the trailer so many times. I even saw the little thing about Henry Cavill, which I won't say in case you guys haven't seen it, but I saw that, and I'm dying.
So we actually, not only are we doing this show next week and are we excited about it, but we have two very special guests.
We have two awesome guests.
Yeah, we've got the Real Rejects. John Humphrey and Greg Alba are coming on the show with us next week to break down Mission Impossible Fallout. So tweet at those guys, Real Rejects. They have a huge YouTube following. Awesome dudes, also competitors in the Schmodown. So we will be having them on as first-time guests next week. We can't wait.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of Greg and John, even though Greg liked to throw a little jab at me in the free-for-all about being the team action guy. But I'm so excited. They're so excited. They tweeted at us about our MI3 episode. Go and catch up with AMAs online. Go to our YouTube page. Find MI3, 4, 5, 1, and 2. We did them all.
We've done them all.
We've done every Mission Impossible film, and we're going to follow it up next week.
Yeah. With Mission Impossible Fallout. So, Jules, thank you so much for being up in the booth today. Guys, thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. If you want to follow along, you can find me at Ben Bateman Media, and you can find the podcast at Team Action Show.
I love it. Guys, I'm Andrew Guy, and that's where you can find me online at that same name.
All right. We'll see you guys soon.
Bye.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.